Hello and welcome to the Women's County Cricket Weekly Wrap-Up Show. Today I'm joined by my co-host, Aaron Viles.
Thank you very much, Lucy. Thank you for the nice intro. In terms of today as well, the weather, unfortunately, in Warwickshire has taken a turn for the worse. So it's not looking great. I had a net session last night, which was cancelled, unfortunately, due to the wet weather. I mean, it was just absolutely awful here. Torrential rain at times really dampened the mood and the spirit after what was an excellent day of cricket yesterday, really, apart from up in Durham, where a certain Midlands county did get absolutely hammered on day one by the northeastern side. But yeah, Lucy, obviously today, new day, fresh starts, feeling positive, and yeah, looking forward to what should be an excellent podcast today here on the Women's County Cricket Weekly Wrap-Up Show.
Yeah, the weather's gone a bit grimmer in Gloucestershire as well, but oh well, hopefully it'll clear for tomorrow.
Fingers
So
crossed.
we are joined by Sussexes and Southern Vipers, Georgia Adams. How are you, Georgia?
I'm very well, thank you. How are you guys?
Yeah, we're good.
Could be better. I'm going to be honest. As I said, the weather ain't great. Okay, I like my good weather. And yeah, of course, yesterday, arguably the worst day of cricket, I'm going to be honest, that I've seen from that certain Midlands county since 2017. But in terms of the day, as I said, got to have a new positive outlook. And yeah, should be a good podcast.
They'll bounce back, I'm sure.
Fingers crossed.
They
Fingers
are top
crossed.
of the table, so you never know. You never know what could happen.
Not for much longer. Oh.
I mean, I know this is women's cricket, but on that note, though, the men's county champs this year has been really exciting because you've seen so many low scores and then teams bouncing back second innings and putting 300 on the board. So it's like all out 80 in the first innings. It's been exciting. I've enjoyed following it, actually.
Absolutely. It has. It's been absolutely brilliant viewing. It really has. I mean, we have a wrap-up show here on TCCP, and every single week there seems to be a new story, a new narrative, some new thrilling end to a game. I mean, it has been a fantastic start. And of course, we'll touch a bit about women's county cricket throughout this podcast as well, I'm sure, Georgia. But yeah, what a start to the season. 2021 has the makings of being a very, very promising cricket year in general here in England and Wales.
Got a lot of making up to do, really, don't we? We lost too much, don't we?
Yeah, sure do. Oh, yeah, we'll talk about 2020 as well. I suppose we have to, but yeah, what a horrid year that was.
Yeah, I know. One, well, I say one to forget, but also one to, I think that well, I won't ever forget because we obviously lifted the trophy. So it was like a year of two halves, really.
Brilliant. Let's get into it. So, Georgia, tell us about your kind of first cricketing memory, whether that's playing, watching, or just being involved, really.
First cricket in memory, that's probably up at Derbyshire County Cricket Club. Amazing place if you've ever been there. And I think it's pretty much just running around in the outfield there. And I must have been sort of four, maybe, 3 or 4. Growing up, obviously, with my dad playing cricket and being a professional cricketer, my childhood was just spent following him around like a puppy dog. And I think I knew early on, and I think everyone else in my family knew early on, that cricket was sort of in the blood and was what I wanted to do because they couldn't get a ball out of my hand when I was like three, throwing things at everything, probably breaking everything as well, causing absolute carnage. But yeah, I think nothing really specific, but I do remember vividly, like we moved to Sussex when I was four, very nearly five. But I can still remember being up at Derbyshire. So I must have been four at that time, which is scary, long time ago.
Tell you what, very, very young journey into cricket then, only four. I mean, my goodness. I was a little bit older than that, I'm going to be honest. Would have been about year four. And that's when we used to play diamond cricket. I mean, for those out there who know diamond cricket, absolute classic. Lucy, I mean, we spoke about diamond cricket here on the podcast before, haven't we? What a game that was when you're in
We love it
Pirates.
on the County Cricket Podcast.
Yeah.
Absolutely love it. We are big pro
Maybe we
fan
should have a
of it.
team. Maybe we should all maybe we should set up like a diamond cricket competition or something. You guys leading from the front, you're gonna have to captain.
Hey, if that opportunity pops up, I'll be there. Simple as that. Any podcasters out there, any listeners that want to challenge us to a diamond cricket match, we're here. We're ready to accept the challenge.
I remember when it was brought into the All Stars setup, and I was like, oh my gosh, we're playing diamond cricket. And they were all like, what's this? I was like, oh, you wait.
You like
You wait. You will see.
Diamond cricket. Big crowds for that.
The parents, like, why has she gone so competitive? I'm like, well, here we go.
Here we go. I love it. I love it.
What a game.
Yeah.
It's an absolute classic. And for those outside of the UK, we do have non-UK listeners, just Google it. Just search it up. Google, Bing, whatever your preferred search engine is. Diamond Cricket. Get playing a game, in particular for a young cricketer. Absolutely brilliant.
Garden. Perfect.
Exactly. But enough reminiscing about Diamond Cricket, because we aren't the Diamond Cricket podcast, although, again, we probably could do an hour of that. But, Georgia, you mentioned there about in those early days, of course, your dad was a massive, massive inspiration. And just for those out there who don't know who your dad is, do you just want to explain a bit about Chris and his influence on your cricketing journey?
Yeah, so obviously my dad was a professional cricketer. He played for Derbyshire and he went through the ranks there. Like, he was lucky it was different back then. So they were only sort of on 6-month contracts at the time. So he picked up a contract at 17, which doesn't often get seen anymore. But yeah, I think that they made the move down to Sussex when I was about 4 or 5. So I really grew up down here, really, down at Hove. And he took on the captaincy at Sussex and was probably the most successful captain down there, winning 3 championships. I should know that. I'll have to double check. But and in 2003, obviously, I remember it. I've got a great story about this because we were just, I was at my normal village school, and then one of the sponsors down at Sussex kept pestering my dad for a couple of years, like, send your kids to my school. And he had a really small private school sort of in the outskirts of Sussex. And my dad was like, I know we're cricketers, but we're not made of money. Like, we don't have that sort. And he was like, honestly, just send your kids to my school. We'll put them on scholarships. We'll put them on, like, we'll do you a deal, get your kids down here. So he was really supportive of us and was desperate to get us there. So the first year I joined Handcross Park was 2003. So I was sat in my math lesson at school, age 10, and no word of a lie, all of a sudden, the headmaster sprints in, the door flies open, they've only gone and done it. And everyone in the class is like, the headmaster's lost the plot. Even I, at this point, was like, what is he talking about? Because as a 10-year-old, I didn't quite realise the impact here in Sussex of winning that county championship in 2003 and how big it was at the time. I was just blissfully unaware. So he's literally like, they've done it. He's like, you're getting picked up early from school. Your mum's coming to pick you up. You're going down to Hove. So I'm like, this is great. Like, headmaster's lost the plot. I'm leaving school early. Like, get to go down to the cricket, get there, and I'm like, what's going on? And then obviously now looking back, I realise the nature of how big that win was. And, you know, also how lucky as a kid I was. I grew up and got into cricket in a very informal manner. My dad wasn't pushy at all. It was just play, just let me do what I needed to do. So my cricket was not quite diamond cricket, but it was playing, you know, with the tennis ball or with the incredible on the outfield with Tommy Moores, who's obviously now doing really well at Notts. And we were best mates growing up. We were inseparable, and a few of the other kids, like Mark Robinson's kids and things like that. So it was just really informal entry into cricket. I never had any formal coaching, so to speak, and my dad didn't give me much technical input at all. It was just very much learned from playing every weekend with the other players' children and sort of watching. I just watched. I didn't even realize women's cricket existed until I was about 13, I don't think. So I think then, at about the age of 12, I think Claire Connor, because she was captain of Sussex women at the time and obviously England women, was bumped into my dad at the county ground and sort of said, I've seen your daughter playing on the outfield a couple of times, send her to Sussex trials. She should be playing Sussex women, like in the system. And he was like, oh, well, I didn't know much about it. So he sent me down one day. So I sort of went to the trials, got in, and I guess started playing more formal versions of the game when I was about 13. So yeah, it was slightly different way into cricket and different childhood. And it was strange because I hadn't played hardball. I remember turning up and a lot of my friends had been in the Sussex age groups for at least a couple of years. So we're all used to playing with a half ball. When I'm there, like, I've never hit a half ball before. Like, it's all really strange. But I can't complain because it went pretty well. I got moved up to the under 15, so I must have done all right.
Yeah, fair play. What a journey into cricket that is. That really is a nice journey into cricket, I must admit. And of course, that Sussex team of the early to mid-2000s were absolutely unstoppable in the county championship. As you rightfully said, Georgia, three times winners, 2003, 2006, 2007, with Don Robbo at the helm, Mark Robinson. I mean, what a team. And of course, skippered by your dad. I mean, that must be immensely proud to have that in the family. You've got a county championship winning captain as your dad, and then you followed basically in his footsteps and played for Sussex Women. I mean, how proud are you as a family unit to have such an illustrious sporting family?
Yeah, so proud. And I think my parents, both of them, in fact, my mum's probably more vocal than my dad. My dad's quite chilled and made back. She always goes, "You get your cover drive from me." it's all from me. It's not from him. But yeah, I think we're all so proud of each other. And I think it's such a nice feeling as well to have that family support for one another, but also no one's like I've certainly never felt forced into anything. And my mum and dad are now avid tennis players that love tennis, obsessed with it. And my mum, even to this day, so she was heartbroken because when I was a youngster, I was a really keen tennis player and I was pretty decent apparently. And I won a tournament that I went off to, and then I turned around and the tournament was so horrific in terms of the pressure. And I remember this girl who I was playing against, her mum kept accusing me of cheating every time I called the ball out, because obviously at amateur level you make your own line calls and things like that. And I just turned around to my mum and went, "I don't ever want to play tennis again." She was like heartbroken, but she was like, that's okay, that's what you want to do, because she's always loved tennis. And she says to me now, she said, "Oh, I wish you played tennis, you could have gone somewhere." But I wouldn't have it any other way. I knew pretty early that I was cut out for team sport, so I don't know how they do it on their own. So yeah, it's great. And like, my little sister plays as well, and to see her, she's sort of, you know, she idolises sort of me and my dad, and she's desperate to play cricket too. So we've got a real sort of sporting family, and we all get behind each other as much as possible.
Well, that's very, very nice to hear. Very, very supportive family unit then. And I'll tell you what, Georgia, we're glad that you didn't take up tennis, because otherwise you wouldn't be here on today's podcast talking all things cricket.
Could have been so different.
Could have been, yeah. You could have been on the women's tennis podcast instead, or whatever the leading tennis ones are. Apologies, I'm not a massive tennis fanatic, yeah, no. But it's weird how life works out, isn't it?
Oh, dear.
But in those early days, in those formative years then, Georgia, you mentioned about not really having, well, I suppose, any female role models in those days, because you only really discovered the sport at 13. Looking back, do you think that you wish you would have had those role models in those formative years, that you would have maybe picked up on women's cricket a little bit more, for example? I mean, look at today. You've got all of these fantastic competitions, the WBBL, we've got the T20 Challenge as well in India. Of course, here we're going to have the 100, the Rachel Hayhoe Flint Trophy. Do you wish that in those early days you would have had those female role models? Or is that something that hasn't really concerned you over the years?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, obviously, I was always so lucky that I was always in and around cricket because of my dad. But not everyone gets to go have a childhood that I had in that respect. So to go for such a long amount of time and be such a huge cricket fanatic and not actually realise women played, it does sort of dawn on me that hopefully now in this day and age that's very different. And also the importance of role models, because when I did become familiar with Claire Connor, she did really become, to me, she was my idol at the time, because I made choices that I then wanted to go to Brighton College, because she was sort of a teacher at Brighton College at the time, and they had like the Claire Connor Cricket Scholarship, and that was like, I had all my eyes were focused on getting that. And yeah, she really became my role model, but that wasn't probably until, like I said, the age of 13, 14. And then that sort of opened my eyes that, you know, if I invest myself fully in this and if I work hard, you know, you might be able to have a career playing cricket. So I do think, especially now with the way the game has grown and how much the standard has improved over the last 10 years, not just in this country, but globally as well, I think it's so pleasing now to see at games, you're getting 9-year-olds, or I get tweets from parents of their kids age 8 or 9 in a Viper shirt saying, you know, she can't wait to come down to the game. And there's nothing that you want to see more. And I think it's so great that now, hopefully, we can all be not just the England players, but the regional players can be role models to those young girls and get as many people playing the game as we possibly can.
Absolutely. Georgia, that is a fantastic answer. It really is. And of course, we'll discuss that more at length as the podcast progresses. But just before we do, Lucy, I wanted to ask you, because I mentioned this on the podcast before. Again, I'm a bit of a latecomer to women's cricket in general. So I only really found and discovered the women's game in 2017 with the World Cup. But Lucy, when did you actually find out your love for women's cricket? When did you first kind of touch upon the women's side of the game itself?
So I started playing for a women's only team or girls only team when I was, I think I was about 13 or 14. Because obviously, like Georgia, I grew up playing like in the boys team and, you know, around boys and stuff with at my club. But then when it comes to like watching women's cricket, I'd always kind of not really... I'd always watch it if it was on type thing. But again, it must have been at least, I was probably about 15. And then my kind of love grew for it in when the Kia Super League started, really.
Yeah, it was good, the Kia Super League. And of course, we will touch upon that in today's podcast. It is going to be a main feature. But Lucy, in those, well, I suppose there were formative years in the women's game. Who did you look up to as role models, per se? I mean, in the men's game, I'm going to be honest, one of the funniest comparisons you're ever going to hear as a role model. Bear in mind, I'm very much a tail ender. One of my absolute all-time favourites is AB de Villiers. And yet I cannot bat to save my life. But Lucy, what about for you? Who are your role models and influences, per se?
Two I probably really just looked up to, kind of, is like Sarah Taylor and Charlotte Edwards.
Yeah, I mean, not bad choices there at all. Sarah Taylor, of course, who'll be back this year as well, won't she? That's going to be massive.
Yeah, can't wait for that at the Welsh Fire, yeah.
Me as a Birmingham Phoenix fan, maybe not so much. Hey, we'll have to wait and see what happens with regards to the 100. But before we talk about the Kia Super League and the 100, of course, Georgia, we have to touch a bit about Sussex. Of course, we have to touch upon the southern side, because you mentioned there about going through, well, the age groups. You made it into the under-15s after that trial. But what do you remember from your debut for Sussex themselves? What do you remember from that particular occasion?
Oh my gosh, it felt like I was playing for England. Walking onto that pitch, and you looked around, and I lose track because over the years we've had so many England players sort of come and go. But I'm pretty sure at the time when I made my debut, we had 7 or 8 of the England side. Because we still had Laura Marsh playing. We had the likes of Holly Colvin, who I think flies under the radar in this day and age. I can't believe it when you say to girls, Holly Colvin, and they go, who? She was one of the best England women's bowlers of all time. But obviously retired very early because she always had career aspirations outside of cricket as well. And, you know, when you start playing for England at the age of 14, by the time you are 24, 25, you've kind of had your career. So, obviously Sarah Taylor as well was a huge part of the Sussex team. Rosalie Birch, Caroline Atkins. I really don't want to miss someone. But the list goes on. And then we had Aaron Brindle sort of introduced into the mix in later years. It was such a strong team. And Sussex always backed me and supported me. And I think making my debut, I was probably batting at 7, but I still got to go in. And I think I did all right. Like I got 15 not out or something, and I'll take that. But it really did feel like I was walking onto the England pitch. And it's that need and that want to, not just the nerves of representing your county fully for the first time, but also, you know, show your worth in and around this team of ridiculous players who are all extremely talented. So yeah, and I was really lucky quite early on. I think I had a year of running the drinks and batting at 6 and 7, and then I think from about the age of 16 I pretty much got the go-ahead to, they backed me to open the batting. So again, it was daunting with all these brilliant players around you to want to go out there and prove your worth and open the batting with Caroline Atkins, which I did many a time. But they all made me feel very welcome, and they were all very supportive of me throughout the whole time. So, yeah, it was great.
I can imagine. And of course, Sussex have been a powerhouse in women's domestic cricket. I mean, you look at the county championship, for example, won it in 2003, 2004, 2005, won it in your second year there as well, 2010 and 2013. So obviously a lot of history and pedigree associated with the Southern side. And George, if we're looking in retrospect with regards to your time at Sussex, what would you say has been your favourite moment? Is there a particular highlight that stands out above all of the rest?
I think probably for me, like the when I very first captained the side against Yorkshire, I scored 100 that day, and it was my first century for them. So I think that was probably pivotal, because even though we've won championships, which I think is always a huge moment, I know I was dipping in and out through injury and suffered quite a lot as a youngster with injuries. So I was always around, but I don't know how involved I felt in those championships. And it was becoming a little bit like it was expected upon that Sussex team to go out and win the championship. So I don't want to say it doesn't feel special, because that's not taking away winning a championship. But at the time, it was just, I remember walking out onto the pitch and everyone was like, well, Sussex will win the championship again. And actually, that was what was really difficult about taking on the captaincy and rebuilding, because we had a completely different team, yet we were still walking onto pitches and playing against teams who were going, who still had that expectation of us with those 6 to 8 England players inside. Oh, they're going to win championships. And I'm going, you look around our average age now, actually, the average age of our team is about 21. So we had to go through that rebuilding phase. But I think for me, that day was really special, and the way everybody made me feel. And I think from then on, it cemented the captaincy role for me. And that was probably the moment as well. I mean, you can't complain when you score 100, but that was probably the moment when I fell in love with the captaincy in a funny sort of way. And knew that I had ambitions to go on and try and captain and be a good captain. So yeah, that was probably it, really.
Fair enough. Not a bad moment that at all, is it? To be honest, I can't say the same. Scoring century, either at village, semi-pro, pro level.
Never know. Oh, Diamond cricket.
Yeah, Diamond cricket, yeah. Yeah, probably not with my physique. But you mentioned there captaincy, Georgia, and we do touch upon captaincy as well here on the podcast. How do you actually approach the role of captaincy as a whole? Because captaincy of cricket is very complex. It's not like football, for example, where it's very much you are pretty much the commander on the field, because here you have to maintain a dressing room, you have to set field, you have to know when to rotate your bowlers as well. How do you actually approach the role of captaincy in cricket?
It's difficult. And actually, I think my captaincy has probably changed a huge amount in such a short space of time. In my nature as a person, I'm quite laid back, actually. So I think when I first took on the role, I probably put too much ownership onto the bowlers, in terms of I was quite laid back and was just sort of over to you. What field do you want? Set your field. And I'll back you and I'll support you, and very much had a people person approach. Like, my skills are, you know, being in and around people and hopefully making everyone feel welcome and making everyone feel good about themselves. So I honed in on that probably more than the tactical side of things. But at the same time, I always felt, and I said this to Charlotte Edwards when I first took on the captaincy of the Vipers, and we sat down and we've had loads and loads of discussions about captaincy. And obviously, I think I grew more in the last year as a captain than I probably did in the previous 6 to 8 years as a captain, just through actually taking a minute to ask and listen, or not be afraid to go, okay, well, did I get it wrong there? And how can I do that better? Which I possibly had never done before. Sussex, I found it so daunting at the start, because I was like, I'm here. I can't remember how old I was when I took on the captaincy. Probably early 20s or something like that. And I'm telling Sarah Taylor what to do. It just, I struggled to get my head around that concept. And, you know, we had Aaron Brindle and George Railwis and Danny White at the time as well. And there was always that I didn't feel like my knowledge was as good as theirs. And I was too probably timid and didn't want to tell them what to do, and struggled with things like that. So often just asked for help and delegated a bit. Whereas now I think I learn, like Charlotte Edwards always said to me, be yourself. Don't worry. Like, you're never going to please everyone. So you have to be yourself, and you can't change who you are as a person because of the captaincy. Like, you have to be that person, and you've been pitched for a reason. So that always sort of cemented itself in my head, because I was a bit of a worrier and I was a bit of a people pleaser. And I think because of that, I always had a lot of what ifs. Like, I always undernard, should I take her off now? But then it was that, like, oh, I don't know if I want to take her off now, or I don't know if I want to tell her. So I always felt in the early days, I always got off the pitch or went, oh, I should have done that, or what if I'd done that? So I said to myself in the regional stuff, obviously I don't want to upset a lot of people because that wouldn't be ideal either. But I said to myself, I can't have those what ifs anymore. I can't have those reflections where I'm coming off the pitch every game going, I should have done that, or why didn't I do that? Because I have these thoughts that come in, and you have these gut feels. And I honestly felt like the people pleaser in me stopped me from sometimes going for them and following them. So I think that as well, like saying to myself, you know, we're here to win games of cricket, and when we're out there on the pitch, I've got to follow my gut at times and make those tough decisions and make those tough calls. Your gut tells you things for a reason. And with that as well, also being very, like, you know, hands up if I get it wrong. It falls on me if I do get it wrong. It doesn't fall on the players. So accepting of that as well. But, you know, Charlotte's been great for me in terms of supporting me with the captaincy and, you know, ensuring that players have role clarity. I think that's really important. That makes life so much easier. And sometimes that's quite difficult at county level when you've got England players coming in and out. The girls' roles change all the time. It's so tough, especially for the younger players. One day they're opening and the next week they're batting eight to accommodate England players, which makes captaincy that little bit harder because you know that player's going to be annoyed and you still got to try and get the best out of them. So actually the regional stuff was a lot easier because players had that real role clarity, which the coaching staff and the management team covered that and did all that side of things. And planning. I think finally, planning was so important, and that was a real eye-opener for me last year. Get your plans in place, do everything the night before, 2 days before, and then actually just turn up at the game, and then I can focus on me as a player, prep the way I need to prep, bat, do whatever I need to do, and hopefully my performances will help the team as well. And I noticed a big difference last year because I planned a lot more and played a lot better. So it was an eye opener for sure. But it's been a really rocky road with the captaincy, I think. And hopefully now I've sort of found my feet a little bit.
Well, that's nice to hear. Definitely. And captaincy, it is really tough in cricket. It's just how it is. It's never going to be smooth sailing, is it? It's going to be a rocky road. I mean, we call it here in TCCP the roller coaster of cricket, and it is. There's always ups, downs, and as a captain, it's no difference as well. And I suppose for any young captains out there, the key to really take away from this dialogue is clarity, isn't it? It's clarity with your game plans, clarity with the pre-match planning, and of course, clarity in actually making those decisions and executing them in the moment on the cricket field. So that's really interesting, to be honest, Georgia. Must admit, going inside the mind of a captain, very, very interesting indeed.
To that point now where, like, making those split-second decisions in the field that brings you a wicket or making that field change or that bowling change and then you get a wicket, that's become as rewarding for me as sort of scoring a 50. And that's what you take from it. But then equally, it's like the game, it's like anything else in cricket, it has its downsides. You can change a bowler and then they go for 20 and that's not their fault. It's not really your fault, but that's just the game. So yeah, it's always a roller coaster.
Yeah, it's just cricket, isn't it? It's just cricket, very, very cliche, but hey, it's part and parcel of the game, isn't it, at the end of the day?
So moving back onto the Viper side of things, what do you remember kind of from your debut in the Kia Super League?
Oh my goodness, what a day that was. Because I think that's the first time I played a game of cricket in front of a crowd. I can't remember how many we had that into the Aegeus that day, but we had a fair amount of people in. So the atmosphere was amazing. I loved it. It was like, I think you go one way or the other with crowds. You either go, oh my good, what's going on? Like, there's so many people here. Like, what if I mess it up? Whereas I was sort of like, I relished in it. I loved it. And it was a very interesting game, actually, because we fielded first and Charlotte Edwards and Fee Morris collided heads. And Charlotte Edwards went off the pitch with concussion and never came back on. So in the 19th over, I was actually on the boundary and someone said, you're opening the batting now. Get yourself ready and prepared to open the batting. So I was like, okay. And sort of ran off the pitch. And it's probably the best thing to ever happen to me because I had no time to think or worry or stress. I just literally ran off the pitch, padded up, had a few hits, and then I was walking back out to bat. And I think I did pretty well. I think I got like 40-odd or 45 or something and ended up winning like player of the match and had a really good partnership with Susie Bates. And again, it was eye-opener because she taught me through my innings that day. She pretty much was like, I remember facing Laura Marsh and she was like, she's going to bowl it here because this is the field she's set. So I'm going to try and do this. I don't know if that's your strength or not, but give it a go if you can. And so I was like, okay, I'll try and do that. And I think the simplicity of she's reading the game so well, and obviously this is what players of her caliber do. They read the game and they read the bowlers, and I guess that battle between batter and bowler, they can premeditate or try and predict what the bowler's going to do. And yeah, I don't think I would have come off the pitch with 45 runs that day or something if Susie hadn't taught me through a lot of plans out there. And yeah, so it was a great day. And I think then that was when I got a real taste of, I guess, playing professional cricket and wanting to make it to the top, I think.
Well, that was just it with the Super League, wasn't it? Because it suddenly was this showpiece that just came out. You could go to the big grounds, for example. I remember we had a double header with, funny enough, your second team, the Loughborough Lightning. I think we're playing, I think it was Lanx. Might have been Lanx in a midweek game. And then the Lightning were playing as part of the double header. But it did really put women's cricket a lot more into the spotlight. And I must admit, I really liked it. I did quite like the Kia Super League. I was a bit disappointed when it did end. But of course, we have got new regional competitions. The 100s are welcoming up in 2021. But it was quite a fun tournament. I must admit, we had some fantastic names coming over. Just to mention one for the Lightning. Someone right now in the game of cricket that I quite like is Chamari Attapattu. Very, very good Sri Lankan player. Very, very good cricketer. And I suppose in retrospect and hindsight, again, Georgia, what would you say was your favourite moment in the Kia Super League? What do you say really stands out as a highlight from your time in that competition?
I think definitely winning that first year with the Vipers. It was such a new experience for a lot of us. And I think with the way the competition was run, it was brilliant. Like, we all loved playing in it. It was kind of, you know, our version of the Big Bash. So, and I think it was instrumental for women's cricket because all of a sudden I had kids coming up to me here at coaching at Sussex going, I want to be a Viper. I'm supporting the Vipers and I'm supporting Sussex. So I think it was just another step forward. And I don't think it's by coincidence as well that with the introduction of the Super League, I think England women's cricket started to really fly as well. And I think it was instrumental in, you know, growing the fan base that women's cricket now has. But also enjoyment factor and younger players getting exposure into elite cricket and professional cricket. I'm loving it. Like, I remember the younger players at the Vipers I was young, but, you know, we had 17, 18-year-olds coming in and they were just like, this is amazing. It's the best thing ever. So, and it was still a huge jump from county. So I think now, obviously, with the regional format, it's sort of you've got county, you've got regional, you've got the 100. So there's something for everyone now, which is brilliant. So hopefully the 100 will continue what we started with the Kia Super League, really.
Yeah, fingers crossed. Fingers crossed, as you said, the foundation was laid. And I know, again, this has been a very common theme on the podcast here, but we do want to get up there with Australia. As everyone knows, there is that Anglo-Australian rivalry. We have the Ashes, of course, but they are the titans of women's cricket, and they have been for years, and that's a testament to the domestic structure in Australia itself. You mentioned the Big Bash. It is the premier women's cricket tournament in the world right now. So, yeah, fingers crossed one day we can get up there and we can start beating the Aussies on a regular basis, a bit like how the men started to in the 2010s. But, yeah, at the moment, Australia very, very, very strong. And India, to be fair, India another one, aren't they, that are coming up very, very quickly.
Yeah, I mean, it is nice to see that globally teams are getting stronger and teams are also getting more professional. Because it is bridging that gap, because we want to see sort of every international series, you want to see good games of cricket. You want it to be tough. You want it to be exciting. So it is nice to see that globally investment appears to be going into the women's game. But obviously, yeah, Australia are leading from the front. And I know a lot of, I can imagine it'd be the same in all the regional teams, but a lot of the girls that play down here at the Vipers, you know, they're desperate. They want to go away in the winter. They want to get out to Australia to play out there, because even their club structure is so strong. So I think that's where, obviously, moving forward in the next few years, England cricket will be definitely looking at going, how can we bridge that gap and how can we get close to them? Because at international level, you know, it's always a great game of cricket between England and Australia, and they probably are the slightly better side, as it pains me to say, but there's not much between them. But obviously then from the bottom of that, there probably is quite a huge gap, which I now think with the regional setup will be, you know, we'll be catching Australia in that front, but we're still a little bit behind them. We'll get there.
We will get there. Simple as that. Yeah. We got there beforehand. We'll get there again. I'll tell you what, though. It is interesting, isn't it, right now, the women's international circuit in particular, because you have got a lot of teams rising up. South Africa, another one, aren't they? Which is really starting to come to the forefront. We had quite a few South Africans in the Kia Super League, and we'll have some more in the 100. And then Thailand as well. Thailand were such an incredibly likeable team at the 2020 T20 World Cup, weren't they? And it's fantastic to see, well, an emerging nation come.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, it's an eye-opener when you see, like, speaking to, obviously, Mignon Dupriya, who comes over and played. I was really lucky to play with her at the Vipers and Loughborough Lightning. And honestly, one of the nicest people I've ever met. Like, you just can't, she's not got a bad word to say about anyone. But she was saying, like, she has to do these tournaments. She has to play in as many tournaments as possible to earn a living, basically, because obviously South Africa cricket, despite being so strong, I'm not sure what their current status is, but at the time they weren't professional at all. So those players, and the same in New Zealand, those players were having to earn their way by trying to get into the Super League, into the Big Bash, you know, hopefully into what will be a good, strong women's IPL moving forward in future years. To get by. And it was crazy when you speak to those players, because, you know, Mignon never spent time with her husband. She hardly ever saw him. And I know she struggled at times, and her body struggled at times from playing so much cricket all the time. But obviously it was a positive for us, because it meant that we got those players keep wanting to come back. And you did see in the Super League, obviously Australia being fully professional, those players started to not want to come over quite as much. But I do hope moving forward that globally, you know, every sort of all those strong teams can get everybody professional, because the caliber of players that they've got in South Africa and New Zealand is ridiculous. They're so strong, some of the best in the world. You'd like them to not have to feel like they need to play in every single competition to earn a wage, really.
Definitely, yeah. I mean, again, you just mentioned it. Well, hit the nail on the head. Two very, very promising sides, aren't they? In particular, New Zealand. Like, I watched their T20 competition, the Super Smash, and it is absolutely fantastic, seeing the likes of Susie Bates, Sophie Devine, one of the best-named cricketers in the world, Leah Tahuhu. Fantastic name. But, yeah, there's all of these fantastic players in New Zealand itself. And, yeah, as you said, it's just about, you know, building upon that foundation, making it more professional game, and I suppose reducing the need to continue this travelling just to make your way. But yeah, it should be interesting. Of course, we are making the right steps, fortunately, well, across the world right now. Fingers crossed the women's stage will become a lot more competitive and the gap to the Aussies will close. I mean, that's the end goal, isn't it? Yeah, that is a big picture. But Lucy, I have a question for you, actually, because we're mentioning franchise cricket here. Okay, so we've got the 100, did have the Kia Super League, got the Big Bash, Super Smash, the Women's T20 Challenge. If you could choose one franchise tournament to go and play in, where would you choose and why?
That is a tough one, considering I wasn't the best. probably the Women's Big Bash. But I think after this year, it could change to like the 100. Or it could change even more to like the Women's IPL, because that is something I really want to see. But I'm also really looking forward to the 100, so yeah.
What about you, Georgia? I'll ask you the exact same question.
Yeah. I think I love to play in the Big Bash. I think it's always just to go out anyway to Australia. Like, it's a great place. I love it out there. So I do wind Lottie up, because obviously she's not a head coach out there, but she's an assistant coach for Adelaide. So I'm always like, come on, get us out there. Like, no, I'll come and play. But yeah, the Big Bash would be amazing. But equally, like, I think playing in the Super League, you know, we got it so right. And the ECB supported women's cricket and did amazing putting the Super League on. So hopefully the 100, especially means I don't have to captain it, so I don't have to think about all the quirky rules and everything, will be great fun.
Absolutely, yeah. God, very busy year of cricket, haven't we, here in England and Wales, but it should be brilliant.
Had to captain, we had a practice 100 game the other day, and I looked at Charlotte Edwards and went, I thought I was never going to have to captain one of these, and she was like, surprise! And I was like, but actually, it all went very smooth, so we just didn't have any tactical timeouts or anything like that.
Oh.
We got to take the timeout. Yeah. I think people would have ended up forgetting.
I done the scorebook for one 2 years ago, and I was just getting so confused, because I don't know what our rules are going to be, but it was like with the 10 over or the 10 ball over, you could kind of split it to two bowlers. And I was like, hang on, he's just bowled 10, but now this guy's bowling 5, and then someone else is bowling the next 5. And I was just having a meltdown, and oh, it was horrible.
Yeah. And you know what was weird on the scoreboard is, you know, sort of you look up at a scoreboard and you've got the required run rate in a T20, a normal format of cricket. It was runs per ball. So when you're looking up going like 1.2, you're like, that seems low, but then you're like, actually, is that high? Mm. Like, where do I want this to be? Because it's like, you've got nothing to base it on. So, and then it got down to like 0.8. So I was like, okay, well, this isn't good. Like, and it was just small things like that as a player, like looking up on the score. And I was like, at first I looked at it and I was like, I don't even know what that means. And then I think someone was like, I think it's runs per ball. Like, that would make sense, RPB. But yeah, no, it will be quirky, it'll be exciting.
And then I saw like a new scoreboard the other day, and it said outs, and I was looking at the score and I was like, that doesn't look right, that is so weird, stop. It was like 3 outs. I was like, 3 what?
In baseball.
I'm not sure about that. That's the only thing that I'm a bit like, yeah. Because obviously they have been conscious of terminology for supporting the female game as well, which I think is brilliant. Like, everyone's referred to as batters and things like that, yeah, which is great. But I didn't quite understand the wickets and the outs. I'm like,
I think it's just because cricket, when you think of cricket, it's such a complex game, I think, because they want to attract new fans. If you just say, oh, they're out, instead of, you know, you've got a wicket and then referring them to as out. So I think it'll go back to wickets at some point. But I think
it already has.
For like the new fan base type thing.
No, oh, that isn't even a joke. It genuinely did. You know, that was it, the Telegraph? There was an article in the Telegraph or the Mail or something like that, which was the one which said about the changing wickets to outs. Within the space of 4 days, they've changed it back, so it will be wickets. So,
oh, it will, right, okay.
Yep.
That's good. Because I was just getting confused.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Hallelujah.
Hallelujah, yeah. I wasn't quite sure. Like, I did see that, and I saw something with Heather Knight sort of saying, you know, it's great that the terminology is slightly changing for things. And I was like, well, why are we changing wickets? Like, wickets doesn't affect anybody. Outs.
Well, that was the thing, wasn't it? Because if you're only going to call them outs in the 100, let's say that a young fan was going to go and watch T20, or Test or ODI, suddenly the wickets, and that just makes it a lot more confusing. But again, fortunately that hasn't happened. But I suppose that is a fantastic way actually to bring up the 100, and then I think we'll wrap up the main section with the Rachel Hayhoe Flint Trophy, which of course the Vipers are the holders of. But George, I suppose this is a rather cliche question, and I think we know what the answer is going to be, but how excited are you for the 100, for this massive showpiece tournament in 2021?
Very excited. Obviously, with it getting cancelled last summer, it almost feels like the anticipation is building and rising for the 100. So yeah, just especially as a batter, obviously it's a format where I would like to say you could walk out the crease with no pressure, because I'm sure there's going to be moments where, you know, be walking out to the crease needing four to win off the last ball or something like that, which is definitely pressure. But you can definitely walk out to bat and be really confident and sort of, you know, experiment and throw your hands through the ball. So it will be exciting, really exciting format in the game. And I hope fans love it, you know, as much as we're really getting into it. And I've played 300 or 400 games now, got my head around it pretty much, and I think it will be exciting. I think it'll take a year or so to take off in terms of like tactics, because I do think like tactically it is a different game and it is slightly different, and we might not see it at its best in the first season from a tactical point of view. But I do think, you know, in 2 or 3 years' time, it could get even more exciting, because you will have that real statistic input as well, where tactics could start to play a huge role in the games as well. So I think it'll be exciting, and I hope people enjoy it.
Brilliant. And how much do you think it will have as like an impact on women in England and Wales as well?
I think the fact that we're playing back-to-back games with the men, and obviously the ECB making the decision to kickstart the competition with a women's match, which I'm really happy to be playing in, it is such a bold statement, and will be phenomenal for raising the profile of the women's game. And I just hope that people watch it and realise how good women's cricket is, and the calibre of the players. That, you know, when Soph Devine scored that 100 out in New Zealand, you know, that was a ridiculous innings. It was like incredible striking. Whether you're a female or a male, like, it's up there. And what's been great is the fallout of that and feedback since that. It's been kids going, wow, like, young boy cricket is going, I want to bat like Soph Devine. And I think that's what hopefully we'll get to, that stage where, you know, in the women's game all the time, we all watch men's cricket, we love men's cricket. You know, I want to bat like AB de Villiers, that'd be great. And I think what the 100 is opening doors for is those young cricketers, female or male, and older cricketers, female or male, going, you know, I want to bat like Susie Bates, or I want to bat like Soph Devine, as well, because I think when you see the standard of the game now, it is exciting. And, you know, we see 160 get put regularly on the board, especially in the last year of the Super League. We were chasing down 150 plus most games, or trying to set 150 plus most games, and that's to where it's got to. 4 years ago, when I started playing for the Vipers in the Super League, or 5 years ago, it was 120. The stat was 120 was par, 130 won you a game of cricket. So I think that shows now, and it's obviously elevated as well in the men's game, with them getting 180, 200 on the board now, just how good the women's game is and how exciting it can be. So yeah, I think the back-to-back matches and just the marketing and the media exposure around the 100 will be fantastic for promoting the women's game.
Well, hopefully, yeah. Hopefully it will be. And I'm glad you mentioned that knock from Soph Devine, because that was for my New Zealand team, the Wellington Blaze, I suppose. That's what they are in the Super Smash, the Wellington Firebirds as well. We get on well with them in our certain Midlands county, which, again, I'm trying to refrain from mentioning throughout today's podcast. But yeah, absolutely extraordinary display of ball striking. Really was one of the best 100s you'll see in cricket. It's as simple as that. It's absolutely brutal. And I suppose, of course, aside from the 100 is the showpiece, but as well, a really exciting competition now in the women's game here in England and Wales is the Rachel Hayhoe Flint Trophy, which last year burst onto the scene. I mean, we had some fantastic stream figures as well on Twitch, YouTube. We've got these brand new teams. I mean, for my example, we've got the Central Sparks here in the Midlands. But Georgia, how big of a boost do you think that those regional teams will have on women's cricket here as well? Of course, there's 100. That is the showpiece. But how important of a role do you think that the regional hubs, so the Vipers, the Storm, for example, the Sparks, the Diamonds, how big of a role do you think that they also have in promoting the women's game here in this country?
I mean, they probably arguably have an even bigger role because we're sort of, it's regionalised now. So we're trying to work together as region to promote a fan base for women's cricket, but also across, you know, three or four regions. We're going to the Isle of Wight tomorrow, but, you know, because they're part of our region and we want to show them that they matter and we value their input. So we're heading out there, even though it's a 6 a.m. start, which I'm not a morning person, can't say I'm looking forward to. It'll be great to go over there and play some cricket. So I think, yeah, the regions is sort of probably the foundations, and then the 100 will be the showpiece. It's on everyone's agenda, without a doubt. One of our huge values as a region is to inspire the region and get as many girls playing and grow our fan base as much as possible, because it's so important that, you know, we keep having young Vipers coming through the door and we are role models to people. And we have these big hashtags displayed on every PowerPoint that we do in the dressing room. And I think it really sets the tone when you walk in and you see Inspire the Region, and all of us players live by that and commit to that and do our best to get everyone playing and be role models for these girls. So yeah, I think really the regions are the ones putting in the hard yards and the ones that have to do it all year round. And then the 100 is just, okay, over to you now. We all disperse. The regions have kind of done the hard work. The ECB obviously do all the work behind the 100 and they've done a brilliant job in promoting that and all their quirky new sort of marketing and bright colours and things like that and making it exciting. But yeah, I think the regions, have, especially down here at the Vipers, they've made a real conscious effort to grow the fan base and, you know, inspire people to play the game.
100%. And I think that's a nice way of putting it. You've got almost the workhorses, which are the counties, the regional hubs, the state clubs in like Australia and India, for example. And then you do have the showpieces, but I suppose you can't have the showpiece without that foundation inspiring the next generation, of course. And I suppose this year, last year was the inaugural competition, the Vipers won. I'm guessing that this season, the Southern Vipers will want to retain that crown.
Yeah, definitely. I think we went into last season with no real expectations. We were a brand new group of players thrown together for such a short period of time. We were only allowed to train together as a group because of COVID restrictions about 2 weeks before the competition. And there was two or three players that I'd never come across or never even really played against. So I had to familiarise myself very quickly with the girls and what a group they were. And yeah, I was so proud to see how everybody... I did a lot of media and it was just, I was trying not to get frustrated when people were like, well, you've had huge personal success. It's been a one man show or a one woman show. And I'm like, absolutely not. Like, because what I guess until you play the game, what people don't realise is the day I scored my 154, I wouldn't have been able to do that if we were probably, I wouldn't have been able to bat the way I did if we were 6 or 7 wickets down, because you don't get into that rhythm and you're constantly then going, okay, well, I need to rein it in a bit and I need to bat longer or I need to bat deep. Whereas, you know, having the platform set with Ella McCacken and then Maya Boucher coming in and batting the way she did that game, that set the platform for me to go on and perform the way I did. And I guess people don't realise that from the outside in. It's very easy to go, you were the star of the show, 154, brilliant knock. And it felt like that throughout the whole competition. It was just everyone contributed. Obviously, Charlotte Taylor was brilliant, ridiculous. Like, every time I watched the bowl, I was like, how'd you do that? Like, and she's like, I don't really know, mate. I don't know how I'm doing it, but I'm doing it. So I'm like, you keep going, because if you don't know, the bat won't know. Dino, Tara Norris, Paige, like the list goes on, and just all the girls were phenomenal to play with. So I think it's exciting going into this season, because we've had a really hard winter. We've worked so hard, and the coaches have pushed us. We've obviously got a really good coaching lineup who have, you know, they've worked tirelessly and done a ridiculous amount of hours and probably chucked the best part of 20,000 balls this winter. So, yeah, we'll be after the title again, hopefully. But it gets stronger and stronger each year. So we won't go into it too confident.
Yeah, lots of competition this year, of course, from the Central Sparks. Lucy, from your team as well, the Western Storm. You fancy your chances this year, Lucy?
I think it was quite close last year. Obviously, I was involved with like the media side of Western Storm. And I think like the favourites of that group, I think, were Southern Vipers and Storm. I think they were both kind of competitive in that group. So it wasn't really a shock when Vipers kind of won that group. It was a bit disappointing for the Storm, but yeah, I was chuffed with how well we did do. So yeah.
Yeah, we had two really strong games, actually, like tough games against Storm. I think in both games, it could have gone either way at times, or it was, you know, Storm were cruising it, especially when we played down at Bristol and we played them there. I'm pretty sure they had control of the game for 60, 70% of the game. And then Tara Norris came in and bowled really well into Forfar, and sort of everything flipped. And I guess that's what you love about cricket. You can be so behind, or you can be the underdogs, and then one player can have a great day, or a couple of players can contribute, or one partnership or something like that, and the whole game changes. You know, how often do you see it's like 8 wickets down, and then, you know, your tail enders go out and put on an 80 partnership? It's great. You're like, yes, we're in the game. So, it was Storm were tough to beat last year.
Again, that Southern group was very good, though, wasn't it? A lot of talents, the Stars as well, of course. Yeah, it was a good competition. I must admit it was a good competition. And of course, it will be back this year in all of its glory. And I suppose talking about this year, before we go on to everyone's favourite segment, which is, of course, teammates to round off today's podcast. Georgia, what are your future aspirations in the game? Not just for this season, but beyond that. Do you have any kind of personal accolades or goals that you have your eyes set upon for the next few years or so?
I think obviously first and foremost, like hopefully winning more trophies with the Vipers. We've got the 2020s to play for now as well, so having our name on a 2020 trophy would be great. But I think I've always got one eye on England. I'd love to represent my country. I guess it's any player's real goal to go out and do that. So if that opportunity comes by, then hopefully I can take it and do well. But I think now with the regional structure, that's the best thing about the regional structure coming into place and the pro contracts is, if that doesn't happen, you know, I can look back on a very successful career with the Vipers and take a lot of pride in that.
Well, absolutely. And of course, Georgia, you have had a fantastic career. It's as simple as that. In county with Sussex and with the Vipers and the Lightning as well. I have to mention them as they were my local team in the Kia Super League. And of course, from us two here at the Women's County Cricket Weekly Wrap-Up Show, we wish you the very best of luck, not just for this season, but beyond that, of course, as well. Hopefully still a few more years in you and, you know, scoring more runs, more centuries. Another 154, maybe. Wouldn't be amiss.
I'll take that. Thank you for having me.
Well, no problem, Georgia. But we're not done just yet, because, of course, we do have our final wrap-up segment. I've already mentioned it. Teammates is an absolute classic here at TCCP. So Lucy, do you want to take it away?
Yes. Yeah, so obviously this will refer to the Vipers squad. So I'll start it off with who has the best nickname?
Oh, best nickname. I'm going to say, I shouldn't hate this, Winnie, Emily Windsor, purely because she doesn't like it. She hates it and she kind of fell into it by default. So I'll give that one to her. But we don't have any sort of out of the ordinary nicknames, I'm afraid, to share with you. We'll come up with some this time.
Yeah. Please do. Please do for a future podcast. Moving on to our next one then, Georgia. This is always a classic here. Who is the teacher's pet at the Southern Vipers? Who's always hanging around the coaches asking for advice, net session, stuff like that.
I'm going to have to say it's probably Emily Windsor again. She is a proper, proper badger. It could be closely matched by Ella McCacken, but she's a badger. I wouldn't say she's a teacher's pet. She just absolutely loves cricket. Like, she'll go for an hour's net before a game at a local club and then rock up and have more hits. So, yeah, I'll give that one Emily Windsor.
Fair enough. Yeah, seems fitting of the title then, based off that description. Yeah.
Who is the karaoke queen?
Charlotte Edwards, actually. Leading from the front. Coach. Oh, gosh. Bonnie Tyler comes on. She's off. You can't stop her. You can't get the microphone off her, honestly. Does she count? Are we allowed to say coaches?
Absolutely. Yep. Anyone associated with the Vipers, a fair game. Simple as that. Just wasn't expecting that. Bonnie Tyler. What kind of songs?
All of them. Honestly, they're in the playlist. You can't get the mic on it. You actually can't get the mic off her as well. And it's not even a mic. Normally it's a water bottle or something like that. And she's just wandering around belting it out. So yeah. I have to get some footage.
She's from my hometown as well.
Is she? There you go.
Yes, she is, yeah.
Maybe you should see if she'll send a message to her. Yeah. Reach out.
Absolutely. Moving on to our next one then. Again, very much musically themed. Who's the team DJ at the Southern Vipers and what are their choices of tunes?
Okay, so this might have to be a joint role, but I think Carla Rudd and Paige Schofield are very good DJs. They get a good vibe, a good mix of songs. A lot of Chris Brown. Chris Brown seems to be a hit. A bit of Nicole Scherzinger. That comes on quite a lot. Some throwback classics as well. But yeah, they seem to be the teen DJ. We've had a lot of Justin Bieber recently. Much to some of the girls, like, dismay. They're like, no, not Bieber. But I managed to even convert Charlotte Taylor into a Bieber fan, so we've done well.
Oh, no. That won't happen here. I mean, Lucy, you were, was it, Belieber?
Belieber. Oh.
No, I was, like, back in the day, like, early. But then it just stopped, and I'm glad it stopped.
Oh, wise decision. It's a regular feature on our playlist.
I'll tell you
who's
what.
Go on.
Well, no, it's fine. We just don't usually get that. Or Chris Brown. Don't think that's ever came up before, but...
Rihanna as well.
Now that's better.
Yeah. We'll allow that.
Yeah. A lot of Rihanna, Beyonce, you know, a lot of the classics.
Who is the dressing room joker who's always playing pranks and just messing around, really?
This is a tough one. I reckon I'm going to give this to Paige. She's a bit of a joker. And I reckon we didn't have too many pranks, but I reckon that was because, again, we were thrown together so last minute. Half of us didn't actually really know each other that well. So we're all sort of forming those. Like, but I reckon moving forward, Taze will be the dark horse. She'll throw a few pranks, I'm sure.
Were there any pranks? Any notable ones or not really?
I've had a few at Sussex, you know, where we've hidden people's bats and all sorts. And I've got into a lot of trouble for that with the rebel. It's probably me, really. But yeah. Now, with all the, like, because of COVID and stuff last summer, I've never got any time in the dressing room. So you have to have the COVID talks pre-game, and then you have to meet the umpires, and then straight into warm-up. Didn't have any chance to prank anyone. Gutted.
Oh, that is gutting, yeah. Hopefully in the future, though, Georgia. Hey, yeah. There'll be ample opportunity. Who knows? Yeah. Moving on to our next question then. Who has the best celebrations at the Vipers? This can be centuries, wickets, great catch, after game celebrations, absolutely anything. Who has the best celebrations in the dressing room?
Tara Norris does a good celebration, actually. I like it as well. In all the fits of her, she's like, yeah. So I'll give that one to her. She knows how to celebrate well too.
Who is the best and worst dressed?
Oh, best dressed. Okay, for me, Paige Schofield. I'll give her best dressed. Worst dressed. Oh, this one's a really hard one. I'm going to say Maya Bouchier, the Boosh. She's a bit rogue for my liking. Boosh wears some very rogue garments. And I'm like, I'm not sure anyone could pull that off. But she actually, in a weird way, she does pull it off. So in her head, she's probably like best dressed, and she kind of does pull it off. So it's not horrendous, but yeah, interesting style.
I get that a lot, saying people are like, oh, she's also the worst, but she's the best as well.
She's like, it's something that I would never wear, but she actually somehow gets away with it, so fair play.
What actually defines rogue, though? Like, what are the actual choice of garments which make it so strange?
It's just a bit like, everything's quite baggy. Like, we've also actually, speaking of this, flares were making a comeback last year. Lauren Bell turned up in these flares quite a few times, and I was like, I'm not sure I could pull off some flares like that. But she informed me that flares were in, and because she's so tall, that's what she should be wearing. So I went with it. We all went with it. We were like, okay. And then a few of the other girls have gone out and bought flares. So, you know, next time you see the Vipers off the pitch, we'll all be in flares. We're bringing back ABBA.
Oh, God.
But, yeah, like, I don't know, the boo, she's very like, she's a bit like a skater. Like, you know, like skater style.
Hoodies and trainers. Yeah.
Baggy clothes, like some road colours thrown in there. Like, yeah.
If you can pull it off, absolutely fine, isn't it?
He wears it well.
Exactly.
I wouldn't wear it well.
I don't think I'd look too good as a skater either, I'm going to be honest. I don't think I could pull it off personally. But moving on to our next question then, Georgia. Well, third from last. And I suppose you've already answered this, but who is the biggest badger in the Vipers dressing room?
Ella Mack. Honestly, she will, like, before the Sussex game last Sunday, coach has gone to her, you're not having any hits, Mack. I've already been for an hour hit at my local club this morning. She probably got up at 6 o'clock in the morning to allow for time to go and have a hit. Cause she doesn't live, like, she lives about half an hour away from here, so... Yeah, she's got to have that title for sure.
Yeah, no surprises there.
Who's the social media addict who's always on their phone?
That probably is me. Even this morning with the social media ban, I get a message from our director of cricket saying, Gads, are you going to cope not being able to put your dog's food or your dog's lunch on there? And I was like, I'm going to have to delete the app. that probably is up there with me.
Yeah, first time that's happened, by the way. So
actually, no, do you know who is worse than me? Danny Wyatt. I forgot about the England players. Danny Wyatt, she definitely, you know, with her fan base as well, she's got a lot of fans to please on there. So
yeah, fair choice. To be fair, Danny Wyatt, yeah. does love her social media. To be honest, as do many players though nowadays, don't they?
Yeah. Well, it's become quite like the sponsorships and things. It gets quite demanding. Like, we're sending you this, but you need to do 6 posts on social media. Okay. I don't want to do 6 posts all at once. Just like...
Well, at least time for likes.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, but Danny's got to have that crown. I'm going to give her that one.
Fair enough. Yeah, probably an apt choice. And this final one, Georgia. I say it's the final one. We do usually do a backup for this one, a follow-up. Yeah. But this is the first one, right? Okay. Who in the Vipers dressing room would be the most likely to win I'm a Celebrity, Get Me Out of Here?
Danny Wyatt. Sure. I think she very nearly went on the show at one point. Genuine. I reckon in years to come, post-England career, watch this space. Danny Wyatt will end up on that programme, I promise.
Hear it here first.
Yeah.
And it will be great viewing, because I reckon she'll give it all the big talk and then a spider will come nearer and she will be crying. I hope she'd have to do one of them eating challenges as well.
yeah, bush tucker trial.
Yeah.
Oh, my days.
I wouldn't be surprised if I ever see her end up on I'm a Celeb.
That makes for good viewing, to be fair. We don't have enough cricketers on there. I mean, Tuffers won it, didn't he? He won it years ago. Who else have we had on there?
He's done pretty well on, like, TV programmes and TV shows. Because, obviously, Darren Goff and Ramps won Strictly. Tuffers was on it, you know. Get Danny Wyatt on. We'll start a petition when she retires.
Yeah.
I'm not sure it was fit around her England schedule at the moment.
It would be blockbuster viewing. And, again, the follow-up to this one... is on the flip side of that, who wouldn't last for a day in the jungle? Who would say, I'm a celebrity, get me out of here in less than 24 hours?
Oh, Alice Monaghan. I can't imagine Alice Monaghan lasting an hour. Again, I probably wouldn't either. I mean, I'm done now. This is good while it lasted. Yeah, I'll give that one to Alice Monaghan.
Yeah, fair enough.
No makeup, wouldn't be able to do her hair. Like, yeah, she'd go in the head straight away. This is great, but no.
Yeah. Oh, well, George, I mean, that does bring us to an end to today's teammate segment. And of course, it does bring us to an end to what's been a fantastic episode of the Women's County Cricket Weekly Wrap-Up Show. So just before we end then, Georgia, do you have anything to just plug or promote? Social media channels, websites, for example, for the Southern Vipers, stuff like that?
Yeah, I mean, obviously, we're massively trying to grow our fan base on the Southern Vipers Instagram. So if you can get over there, give us a follow. It's something on our agenda, trying to promote our sort of social media branding, I guess. And we've not actually done a huge amount on it, but I think they're taking a real lead in getting better and giving fans more content. So get over there and follow us. But obviously this weekend we're actually off it. We're boycotting social media for all the racism and discrimination. So...
Well, yeah, of course, Georgia. I mean, for all the listeners out there, do go and follow the Vipers, not just on social media, but of course this summer as well. Plenty of cricket, Oval Invincibles as well, in the 100, and of course for our local ones, for myself and Lucy, which will be the Sparks, the Phoenix, the Fire and the Storm respectively. But yes, should be an absolute blockbuster summer of cricket. Cannot wait. Fans should be back. Hopefully the sun's shining, because it certainly isn't today. Looks like the apocalypse outside, unfortunately, here in Warwickshire. But yeah, I mean, that does bring us to an end to what's been a fantastic episode of the podcast. Georgia, thank you very much for joining us. It's been an absolute pleasure talking all things cricket. And for all of the listeners out there, thank you very much for tuning in. And as always, guys, we'll see you on the next one.